Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Welcome on back to Dana and Parks. A little bit of a fun question for all of you to ponder as you are out and about. Maybe you're driving home. Be careful. You might see more kids out walking today. You should always be careful, of course, when you see kids out and about. But today in particular, there are likely more of them because today is National Walk to School Day. And I remember when my kids were in elementary school, they would do this once a year. Everybody would get in a big old line. Everybody would walk to school. Today is National Walk to School Day. It's always the first Wednesday in October. Today is October 1st, as Dan just mentioned. And parents and kids today were encouraged to walk back and forth to school together. Hopefully not uphill in the snow both ways.
I love that, though. Are they actually walking?
They
or are.
Are
we getting on our e-scooters?
I'm probably some e-scootering as well.
Okay.
Listen to this.
It's the
children who walk to school show higher levels of academic performance, including improvements in attention, verbal abilities, reasoning, and numeric skills. Walking provides physical activity that can reduce stress and anxiety, improve mood, boost self-esteem. It builds daily physical activity behaviors, which can reduce the number of sick days in school and beyond. There's a community connection and reduce traffic and pollution. We know this. When I think back, and I'm going to ask you to do the same, to my grade school experience, that walk to school between ages kindergarten to about the fourth grade are some of my most vivid memories. Not all good.
Core memories.
Core memories. And
Those girls that bullied you?
Yes. Do you guys not remember walking to school? Think about the life lessons and the hierarchy and all of the things you talk about. And I was at a babysitter's house. We all walked together. So it was different ages of kids. I remember one day a girl, we climbed up the snow mountain. We were not supposed to do that on the way. The plows had piled it up in front of one of the parking spaces.
Yeah.
And a girl went to come off that mountain and her foot got stuck.
Like so much of childhood, it's about learning things, consequences,
and
problem solving. I used to walk to school, elementary and middle school, by myself.
Oh my God.
What?
You can't walk by yourself. That's how you get kidnapped. You're supposed to do it in group stand.
Okay, all right.
I walked by myself.
This child who had her foot stuck, by the way.
Whack him with my French horn that I was carrying.
The bell rang. And you know what? This is just like in a Christmas story. You know when the bell rings, we all took off. We're like, I mean, she needs help, but we can't be late. The bell's ringing. You walked to school too, Sam?
By the way, it was totally lawless too. My friends and I thought it would be a good idea to throw sticks out in front of cars.
Yeah.
And we did it every day for like 2 years until one caused a flat tire.
Yeah.
Oh.
How did that work out?
We ran. And he found us.
Bunch of ne'er-do-wells.
And thankfully, he was a parent at the school, so he did not beat the ever-living you-know-what out of us. He just scolded us.
I have told this story before. The one time I walked to school by myself, I was probably 6 or 7 years old at the time. And I don't remember the circumstances leading up to it because we never, ever were allowed to walk alone. But I was walking by myself, and a pack of dogs came around the corner, and I just flipped out. You know you're not supposed to run, right? But I'm this tiny little 7-year-old thing.
Yeah.
And a mom drove by in her car, and it was actually one of my classmates' grandmas. And she said, like, I'm a safe person. I'm going to shoo these dogs away. I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
I'm going to get you to school. And one of the dogs was a chow. Like a red headed chow. I will never forget it.
Chow's
with that black
terrifying.
Tongue as long as I live. I literally thought I was going to die. It's the only time I've ever walked by myself.
Do kids still walk to school as much as they used to, though? Because even when I was in grade school, and granted, I probably did it younger than I should have, but it was a block and a half. Everything was fine every single time. But I would show up and we had an airlock to get into the school. And the secretary at the airlock would be like, well, where's your parents? And I'm like, at work.
I'm here.
What? Well, you need to have a parent with you.
What?
Why? I'm here. Let
How
me
old
in
were
the
you
school.
Sam? How old?
I think I started walking at, really early. I don't know. I don't want to
say.
Well,
I mean, it
probably
was
like first grade.
What? That was this century. Things were different last century.
Yeah. They were.
Yeah. Back in the 70s and 80s.
I mean, it was almost like we were breaking some sort of law because I walked to school by myself,
even though it was only a block and a half. What does it say to us, too, you guys, that, like, there is a national walk to school day? That says to me the other 364 days out of the year, ain't nobody doing it if we've got to have one day to mark it.
I think that most parents are dropping their kids off these days.
Also, because of the population increasing and schools being farther away for some, and also in a more suburban environment, the schools may be across the main road, across the highway.
Yep.
And kids aren't going to be walking.
Communities from more than 40 countries participate in National Walk Our Children to School Day. It used to be National Walk to School Day. They've changed it to National.
Right, because they don't want the kids walking
walk
by themselves.
Our Children to School Day. Good and Sam, God. I'm with you. My parents always worked. And there was no, can I take you to school? My mom was not a stay-at-home mom. We could not afford for her to stay home. And she loved working. And I love that she worked, honestly. They would drive us to our babysitter's house in the morning, drop us off. We'd have, you know, some crackers and some juice.
Yeah.
All get our bags together, all walk to school together, and then walk back home. And, you know, it really was sort of this social, I want to call it a social experiment, but in a way that the kids probably don't have today, where you form friendships and you problem solve.
Oh, my grade school best friends were because we lived near each other and walked home from school together. We never walked to school together because I would always leave at the very last possible second. I was close enough that the first bell was at 8:05 and I could leave at 8:01 and still make it to my classroom on time. I was pretty proud of that one. But it's National Walk Our Kids to School Day. The same fears existed when I was a child. Don't listen to the stranger who pulls up next to you and asks for help. Don't approach the car if they pull up next to you and ask for help.
Right.
If they say they have free puppies or candy, they're lying. Like, it's all the same advice that we got.
Yeah,
you
we
have
got
to
that
watch
advice
out for yourself.
Back in the 70s as well.
We got that advice on a milk carton, Dan. That's why we're all traumatized.
And that's probably why they freak out about parents letting their kids walk to school, even though it builds independence.
It's also an opportunity to try to encourage parents to be involved in their child's life.
I would have done it with our children if there had been, it was probably a little bit too far to walk, but if there had been a group of 10 kids all walking together, I would have been more okay with it than back in the day where you would just say you're walking alone. I would never allow that.
And if my parents dropped me off, I would have been there at like 7:15 in the morning, right? And just sat there for an hour.
There. That was before YCare. Remember YMCA care, you guys? YCare. 913-586-7798. When we get back, you heard this in Dan's newscast. We're marking the passing today of Jane Goodall, one of the all-time great human beings, celebrated for her research and her work with chimpanzees and beyond. And we have a very special guest to speak with us. We're going to take a little bit of a look back. One of my favorite 60-minute stories ever was Jane Goodall in the forest with, I believe it's Lara Logan at the time, did the interview on 60 Minutes. We're going to listen to some of that and talk about her work and her legacy and how that will live on straight ahead. Stick with us. So even I had forgotten some of Dr.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dr. Jane Goodall's amazing accomplishments to humanity. Dr. Goodall was the first scientist to explain to the world that chimpanzee mothers are capable of giving birth only once every 4.5 to 6 years. She knew this because she went into the wild and studied them and immersed herself with them. And was also the very first scientist to show us that chimpanzees, like humans, used tools. It was an enormous breakthrough in our understanding of our closest relative with respect to DNA. And when I heard that she had passed at age 91, while on a tour, by the way, like a speaking tour, I reached out to Randy Wistoff, the former director of the Kansas City Zoo. I cannot think of anyone better to help guide our conversation. And Randy, it is always such a pleasure to have you on the program.
Happy to join you today.
So what do you think about all of this, her legacy, what we have learned over the years, starting even way back in the 60s? There just wasn't a lot we knew about chimpanzees before her.
No, and she was the pioneer of the research that really mattered. She was one of three of Louis Leakey's students, his mentees. There's Diane Fossey, I think everybody remembers her as the gorilla lady. And then, of course, Jane as the chimpanzee lady. And then there was an orangutan lady, Baruque Gadalkas. And they all three went off and studied primates in the wild. And Jane really, I think, got the most attention, I think because of her close association to Leakey and to the fact she was in a British colony when she started. So I think news traveled back much quicker than through that, going through London. So she did an awful lot of stuff. And I had the opportunity to meet her in 2002. What a dynamic lady.
Hey, Randy, real quick, are we on speaker? Is there any way you can take us off speakerphone?
Yeah, I can try. Here, hang on.
Take your time. You're fine.
You got me now?
Way better, thank you, because I want to hear this. You had the opportunity to meet her in 2002. Explain that. Under what circumstance, and what was she like?
I was still at the Omaha Zoo, and we had an IMAX theater up in the Omaha Zoo, like the one here in Kansas City. And every year, every fall, there was a convention to show all the new films. In 2002, there was a film about Jane and chimpanzees. And as she was traveling when she passed away, she did a lot of traveling and a lot of goodwill ambassador work for chimpanzees. So I got invited because I was from the zoo world. In Omaha, we didn't have chimpanzees. We had gorillas and orangutans, but yeah. I got invited anyway and got a chance to meet her and walked into a hotel suite filled with people and everybody standing up, milling about, deep in conversation. And back in this living room area, sitting quietly on a couch, was Jane Goodall. And just a very quiet, reserved person, very quiet in her speaking and talking about chimpanzees. But she was, when she would talk, everybody listened because of what she had to say. So really, really a truly pioneer in conservation work. and she'll be missed sorely.
So she believed that while the wild is the best place for an animal, good zoos play a vital role in conservation by educating the public about animals, raising funds for conservation, and providing a safe environment for some when the wild is too dangerous. And I think people would be surprised, Randy, to hear that she worked so closely in some cases with zoos, but she understood the zoo's place overall.
Yeah, and I think because of zoos' reach, especially over the last 15, 20, 30 years, I think a lot of the conservationists realized that we were ambassadors for animals and would teach conservation. Jane was here in Kansas City when the zoo opened the Africa exhibit and the big chimpanzee exhibit in early, mid-1990s. And I think I heard that she absolutely loved the chimp exhibit here in KC because of the size of it, that she felt like viewing the animals was like viewing them in the wild. They could climb trees, hide in bushes, and really go about their sort of natural behavior throughout the day. If they wanted to get away from other chimps, they could go hide somewhere. And it just was a great habitat. And a lot of the conservationists became good ambassadors for the zoo when they saw a zoo exhibit and really liked it.
So I've read that, like, before she went into the wild and just immersed herself in the zoo chimpanzee population, no one before her had really ever gone in and studied them so extensively. Can you help us understand? They're saying that her discovery about the use of tools with chimpanzees, quote, revolutionized biology and anthropology, fundamentally changing the perception of human uniqueness with what she discovered. What did that mean in your world?
Well, a lot, obviously, but it took the three ladies total were called by Leakey, were called the Trimates. Her and her compatriots in the gorilla and orangutan world. And I think all of them exhibited the number one thing you need as a field researcher is just patience. And the patience to just sit and observe and not interfere, not try and interact, but just sit and watch and record and try to understand what was going on. And I think that she started, as you say, she couldn't get a visa right away when she was heading to Africa, so did some work in a zoo just sitting and observing and learned a lot there just by the common behaviors. And I'm sure in all of her observations, that's where she was able to, she spent so much time in the wild, she was able to sit and observe, and she would see how often females gave birth. So it became from patience, observation, and not trying to become one of the chimps. All three of those great researchers just spent time in the forest watching, helping as they could. Baruti started an orangutan survival center and helped raise infant orphaned animals. So they each did something different, but all were equally important to the species that they studied and just researched.
Randy, I love this. I read that she also named them as she was studying them and getting to know them, whereas prior in science, researchers used numbers for the animals. She gave them names.
Yeah, and I think that was a personal touch. You know, guys sometimes don't have the patience to do that, so just give them a number and record the numbers and what you see. But she took time and she tried to kind of look at what their behaviors were and give them names that were appropriate for the sort of the behaviors they exhibited or the activities they took part in as she was observing over the years.
What's it like being around them, Randy? We talked at some length a few weeks ago about this documentary that's out there about this woman who tried to raise them in Missouri, and they get big and they got aggressive, and then the Fed stepped in, and that's kind of the dark side of the love for these animals. You have been up close to them. What is it like?
It's amazing. When I was a zookeeper in Omaha, we actually would go in and spend time with the gorillas and the orangutans. And it's you really can't describe it. But what you do is try to respect their habitat, their area, and let them come to you. I think these people that raise them as pets and sell them and want to humanize them, zoos don't support that at all. I actually testified at a committee hearing in the Missouri House or Senate about ownership and raising primates, especially chimps. They can become very dangerous, especially when you're trying to turn them into humans and not letting them be what they really were put on this planet to be.
Yeah.
So we totally, totally, totally don't approve of that.
Randy, thank you for your time. Any parting thoughts on her passing?
No, she's a great lady. She did all of her work in Tanzania, and my wife and I traveled there a number of times. We were there last summer, 24. And in Arusha, the town you fly into if you're going to go on safari, there is a African Cultural Center, and the owner of that has built a museum in her honor. And if you happen to be in Arusha one of these days,
yeah,
there's a total exhibit dedicated to Jane Goodall's work, a lot of artwork, and a lot of history about her. So she was a dynamic individual. She'll be missed, and the world is thankful for people like her who do what she did.
Randy, thank you for your time and for your thoughts. You keep trying to retire, and we pull you back in every time there's a story like this, but we do appreciate your time.
No problem. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Be well. That is Randy Westhoff, the former director of the Kansas City Zoo, and prior to that, the Omaha Zoo. I knew he would have met her. When I called him today, I said, I have a feeling you met Dr. Jane Goodall. And yes, in fact, he did, and we thank him for his time. 913-586-7798 is the number as we get ready to move into our topic of the hour. Case out of Overland Park, and it is not the first time we have seen a headline like this. What do you do when there's an assault inside of a nursing home? It has happened again. Huge headline about this a couple of weeks ago in New York. Now it has happened here. We will update you on the case and take your calls on that straight ahead. You are listening to Dana and Parks. Okay, so welcome on in. We have an updated statement from the care center where this happened. And I'm going to be honest, I got to hand it to them for not hiding behind the wall of a PR firm or some sort of health privacy violation. Usually when something of this nature happens, nobody talks.
We cannot comment on an ongoing investigation.
Correct. They have released a statement this afternoon. It is the Garden Terrace at Overland Park. And if you go on their website, it is right here, October 1st, 2025. It says, on the morning of September 30th, 2025, an incident occurred on one of the units at Garden Terrace at Overland Park. Two residents were injured by a third resident. Staff immediately responded to the situation and performed appropriate actions to assess the injured parties and protect other residents. Both residents sustained injuries during the incident and were taken to a local hospital. The third resident was also transported to the hospital for evaluation and treatment. We have assessed the needs of residents not involved in the incident to ensure their continued physical, mental, and social well-being. Resident safety is our top priority. Our staff continually work to protect our residents. We have been and will continue to cooperate with all authorities in their investigation. We will also continue monitoring, they write, the condition of the injured residents. Out of respect and privacy of the families involved, we cannot provide further details. So, look, this is one of the first times I've heard of something like this happening. And the executive director, the staff, they come out and they go, look, this happened. It's in the news. Overland Park Police released a statement about this because one of the elderly residents that was victimized was in critical condition.
Oh, my gosh.
After this happened. But I'm telling you, folks, I don't know how you, especially with like a memory care center or a place where it requires skilled nursing, that type of thing.
Right.
Any place. I don't know how they protect their residents 24/7 when some of them are in very close quarters with a roommate and with the exploding costs of long-term care, very few families can afford a private room. And even if you have a private room, is it really private?
And in a lot of situations, when you hear roommate, a lot of people think that, you know, they've got their own little room to themselves. No, it's basically dorm style living. You've got a 20 or 30 foot by 10 room. You got two beds, one on either side, and then the join space in the middle, and that's it. And they have to have some element of privacy, right? I had mentioned when we brought this up earlier.
Yes, these are adults.
Most of the time, the door is open and or unlocked. That is for their safety so the nurses can get in there. But the nurse can't just walk by the door every 5 minutes and make sure that Bob and Jim aren't getting angry at each other and about to start a fight. Now, did it say, I don't think it did, but did it say whether this happened in a room between roommates or was this like a random attack at the cafeteria?
I have reached out to ask the police department if they can help us have a better understanding of the level of care involved here, okay? The statement says, the headline is criminal investigation. The statement says this happened at a, quote, memory care facility, okay? One of the involved residents that was injured is a 66-year-old male who received life-threatening injuries and is in the hospital. The second guy, 71 years old, is expected to be okay. Two injured, one critically. And then the third resident, the suspect, their words, is an 84-year-old male.
Yeah. The reason I ask is I know people that have worked in those facilities, and specifically in the cafeteria, the seating is a big deal.
This was at 8 a.m., Sam.
Well, maybe they went down for breakfast, and not justifying it in any way, shape, or form, obviously, but I could see how that could escalate into violence from a man with memory care issues. Why are you in my seat?
But what will you do? What do you do with an 84-year-old man who's basically accused of assault and battery? And I'm not saying you look the other way because he's 84.
The Bonnie Gooch curve.
But where are you going to put an aging population in tight quarters when something like this happens?
Yeah.
Do you take the 84-year-old in a memory care unit and put him in jail?
That's what I was saying about the woman up in New York. I mean, and now she is in a jail. And
like a nursing home jail. And I'm dead serious, you guys, when I ask this. You know, we have had an explosion in population in these types of centers. The numbers are not going to go down. The numbers are only going to get bigger. The need is greater for care like this, for centers like this, for staff that are overworked and underpaid in a place like this.
If I learned anything from working with my grandfather, say this had happened with my grandfather and he was arrested and taken to a jail and I went to visit him, the first words that he would have said to me were, "Who are you?" The next words would have been, "Why am I here?
What happened? Why am I here?"
Yeah. What is going on? First of all, what is this place? Because they may not even know that they're in a jail cell.
The fact that the release specifically says this was a memory care facility at this Garden Terrace, and I don't know if there's different tiers at this place.
Yeah.
When my grandmother went in, you graduated into different levels of this space.
Typically wings of the building.
And then all the way down one wing was memory care. Yeah. And that place was sort of under lockdown because they couldn't have people wandering out, obviously.
Right.
For their own safety, could not have people wandering out. I don't know what you do when there's an incident like this, but we have talked about this, what, three times in a span of a few months here?
Yeah. There's also different levels of memory care, but you can't keep the more severe memory care patients separated from the less severe memory care patients because they all have to eat. And you can't build 9 different cafeterias because you have different classifications for memory care.
Right.
And I'm still stuck on how we take an 84-year-old person with memory care issues to trial when I guarantee you
he's not going to remember what happened.
He has no idea what happened.
Phones are already ringing. 913-586-7798. What are we going to do when it comes to cases like this? The 84-year-old suspect, by the way, was also taken to a local hospital, but this release says, and is pending disposition. He is cooperating with investigators. I'm also curious, does the memory care facility in a case like this have the right to say, we are discharging this 84-year-old to family, to relatives? We can no longer have him here because he's harmed residents here. Their safety is important as well. And then is there some kind of track record? Does he just bounce to another memory care center? And do you know when they come in, there is a history of violence with this particular 84-year-old?
But there's probably a history of violence with 90% of the people in there, because that is one of the most common side effects when those symptoms set in.
Oh my God. Let's go to Ron in Kansas City. Hey, Ron.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Hi. So good. Go ahead.
So my sister-in-law is currently in a memory care unit, and what happens in a situation like this is they will put them in what's called a lockdown or a psych unit for 30 days where they will review their medications. They're kind of just locked down into a single room. And there's a lot more supervision at that point in time in a typical memory care. You know, there's two-door room. They kind of come and go, roam around the way they want. They just can't leave the facility. But in this one, they're more strictly watched, and then their medications are reviewed, and then hopefully after 30 days they can go back to their original thing. But the thing is, with criminal charges, I don't know how that part of it will work.
Ron, I don't either. And here's what I do know. We all universally say we never want to end up in any place like this. The nicest place in America. Let's say you've got 20 grand a month to spend on a place like this. Even then, we all say we don't want to end up there.
Yeah. From the text line, I'm a nurse of about 25 years. I started my career early on in long-term care. The facility can and will deny the resident the ability to return to their room if they become difficult or dangerous. So you put them in memory care, solitary confinement?
I don't know, Sam, because if my mother is staying at this facility, or my brother or my father, you are equally worried for their safety now. You can't just turn somebody loose that's done this, right? Despite the fact that he may or may not understand what it is he's done.
But as the kids of the suspect, you're wondering, why weren't you watching closer? Why didn't
because,
you catch this?
And I understand what you're saying, but there's no way.
I'm
there's
paying
literally
you $10,000 a month to look after them. That's literally your job.
You know there's no way, Sam.
And now they're in a jail cell.
You would have to place somebody at the entrance of every – and then you want to talk cost.
I know.
Oh, my gosh, what would that do to cost? I don't think it's feasible to watch them that closely 24/7. It's just not. 913-586-7798. We'll take your calls on this straight ahead. You're listening to Dana and Parks.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a story about this that NPR did, looking into the rise in violence at these types of centers. And I want to read this one paragraph. They write, people with dementia will lash out because they no longer have social inhibitions, or because it's the only way they can express pain, discomfort, fear, disagreement, or anxiety. Common triggers include overstimulation from loud noises, a frenzied atmosphere, unfamiliar faces, all hallmarks of dementia care institutions. Quoting here from Tracy Wharton, a licensed clinical social worker and dementia researcher, we can't expect someone who is constantly and unfailingly disoriented to adapt to our environment anymore. She says we have to adapt to them. But I ask you, after this case in Overland Park and on the heels of others like it, How do you also do that and protect and ensure the safety of fellow residents in these facilities? Let's go to Kelly in Polo, Missouri. Hey, Kelly, welcome on in.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you for the call. Go ahead.
Hi, I love your show. I'm a longtime listener. You get me home every day.
Thank you so much.
So I can tell you, I have limited experience in long-term care for the last 25 years. I did it when I first started my nursing career. And in my experience, the memory care units had a better patient staff ratio.
Sure.
So there was a little bit more supervision than you would find on just the assisted living side. But now, speaking from a hospital employee now, when we have patients that are in the hospital, whether they're geriatric or not, but especially for the topic, since you're talking about geriatrics, if we have a patient that is at risk for harming themselves or someone else, we have an obligation to protect them while they're in our facility, and we put staff with them 24/7 to ensure that they are not injured or they don't hurt somebody else.
Thank you for the call, Kelly, and for the work that you do. Listen to this quote. There needs to be much more of an effort to single out verbal and physical aggression that occurs in long-term care and begin to create a model of violence-free zones in the same way we have violence-free zones in our schools. Because, quote, there is a real problem with endemic violence as much as long-term care providers in general do their best to provide competent, high-quality care. Let's end with Jeannie in Kansas City. Hi, Jeannie. Thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Hi, Dana. Longtime listener. You guys are awesome.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'm a forensic mental health nurse and in Missouri. And what usually happens when somebody goes to jail, like if the 84-year-old gentleman goes to jail, his attorney, the judge, or the jailers are going to recognize that he's not competent to stand trial. And there's a federal statute that says people have to be able to participate in their defense to be able to be taken to trial. And so their attorney, their judge, their jail would reach out to our forensic team and request an evaluation. Our evaluators are all psychologists, and they perform the evaluation. They determine they're incompetent to stand trial, and then they go on a waiting list. Once they're on that waiting list, we have a mobile team that goes out to the jails to try to see them. Some jails, such as Clay County and Jackson County, have actually put mental health beds in their jails because there is such a need for it.
Wow.
If they can't be stabilized in the jail as they work through the waiting list, they eventually come to our hospital. We provide medications and education, and if our team determines that no matter what we do, this person is going to be incompetent to stand trial, they make a recommendation to the court as such, and then that person is traditionally remanded into our custody until a guardian is appointed to them, and then the guardian works with our team to help them find a safe place to manage their behaviors.
And then, of course, Jeannie, and thank you for the call and for the work that you do, you have to involve the families who have families of their own.
Yeah. Like,
this has happened. Your dad has done this.
And again, they're saying, hey, we paid you thousands of dollars to watch after him.
Tens of thousands of dollars.
And now he's in jail?
913-586-7798. We are back with much more. Straight ahead on Dana and Parks, we will continue to follow that case and bring you updates as it is warranted. Back after this.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.